Blog Talk Radio.
Davis, the former West Indies fast bowler. Hello, Winston, how are you?
Hi, Andrew. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine, thank you.
Right, right. And in good voice, how have you been reacting to COVID-19?
Like most people, trying to stay safe and healthy, and we have managed to do that.
Right, 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 indeed. Are you still staying very much in touch with the cricket, Winston?
Yeah, I watch it on TV. I visit certain cricket grounds during the season within reason because, you know, this is by changing circumstances, so one has to be wise as well as enjoy oneself, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are you in constant contact with your family back in St. Vincent and the Grenadines?
Yeah, my family back out there, and I have family in England as well, so yeah, we keep in touch, and our family over in the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm. I'm no doubt looking forward to the West Indies team. My understanding is that the side is going to be that squad in England come Monday. Looking forward to seeing the West Indies guys.
I am a little bit disappointed at the conditions under which they're going to be playing, but I understand the reasoning. But I was hoping that at least they might have been able to get some spectators in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So do you think the circumstances that they're going to be going in will more or less devalue the cricket?
I wouldn't say it can devalue the cricket. I just think that, you know, when you have spectators, you know, people come to the games, mm-hmm. it adds to the atmosphere, and sometimes it gives you a spur.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does, indeed. So you do, in fact, support the West Indies team going to England, because there's some former cricketers who got their doubts. You support the side going to England?
Of course. Look, we got to make a move at some time. Let me put it this way. I'm, for one, I don't believe all the information they're giving about this, what I call an evil disease.
An evil disease? Why do you say that?
Yeah. Well, it has nothing good about it to recommend it. So,
yeah, that's
if
true.
It's not good, it's evil. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, there's about 7 billion people on the planet, and, you know, they're all not dying from this evil disease, so life's got to go on in some sort of form, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. I see. Dr. Ford, any questions for Winston?
Good evening, Mr. Davis. It's great to hear you.
Hi, Dr. Ford.
A very strong voice, and you sound as though you're in great spirit.
Well, praise
how are things,
my brother,
yes, praise how are things
God.
Going for you living in the UK as compared to being back in the West Indies?
Well, since the accident happened in 97, and then I was flown to the United States where most of the major work was done to repair my body. And then I came across to the UK to finish my rehab, and been living here ever since. Look, there are pluses and minuses, but it's far better for me health-wise to be living here in the United Kingdom as a consequence of the accident, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess better facilities and the healthcare system that's a bit more robust than in the Caribbean, and you know, being able to make you live up to your full potential. Go ahead.
I agree with you. People often ask me, you know, Winston, sometimes they say, why are you still in England? Mm-hmm. Suggesting I should move back to the Caribbean. But it's the sun and sea and all that is fine, but there are more to life. And sometimes when you need rapid intervention,
mm-hmm.
you need to be in a place where people have that experience. If something go wrong, I can make a phone call and somebody just say, come in. We'll have a look at you and see what we can do. And over the years, I've found that very helpful in prolonging my health condition.
Okay. I don't know if you'll be willing to discuss such, but are you willing to tell us what really happened to you that you know, how you got injured?
Sure. I mean, it's 22 coming up to 23 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I remember on November the 1st, was a Saturday, 1997. At the time, I was working at East Caribbean Group of Companies, working in the warehouse as a supervisor. I remember we had our end of year, the auditors come in and do the stock taking. You had to give an account of your activity over the years and blah, blah, blah. And then I finished that. But the Friday night before, I went to church. Been a newborn Christian. And I went to a church, the Streams of Power Tabernacle in Zion Hill. And our pastor asked for some men to go out to a piece of land that the church owned to prune some trees and some shrubs, because we were hoping that it was possible to have an open air service on a Sunday there. So after leaving work on the Saturday, I drove straight out there, and it was while pruning a branch from a tree, the accident happened, and it was a very, if you were standing looking at the viewing the situation, you would not imagine something like this would result. But what happened, we were waiting for my brother. My brother had left to do an errand, and we were waiting for him to come back so we can close up everything and go home. And while waiting, I suggested to members who were there that I can go up in the tree and bring down a branch that was hanging low. And after a while, I went up and was chopping the branch and expect the branch to fall to the ground. Another brother from the church came up and we were going at it. And my recollection is I was chopping the branch, and I remember hearing the branch begin to break, and we expected to fall to the ground and everybody happy. But unknown to us, the branch was entangled with another branch above our heads. And when the one we were cutting broke and fell to the ground, it ripped another branch from above out of the trunk of the tree and brought that crashing down on the back of my head. And that drove me to the ground, and from that instant, I was paralyzed.
Oh, no.
And it's something as freakish like that. You just couldn't imagine something like that.
Okay.
So the guys came and they I couldn't move, and they rushed me to the hospital. And then I think about a week later, I was air ambulance up to the United States, where I spent 5 months receiving treatment at the St. Mary Trauma Center in West Palm Beach. And after 5 months, I was flown over to England to finish my rehab up at the Robert Jones and Agnes Hunt Orthopedic Hospital up in Gaboyne. And I spent another 10 months there. So in all total, I was in hospital for 15 months before being discharged back into the community.
Who are the individuals you'd like to thank for making it possible for you to get all that medical care for 15 months, because we know it wouldn't have been an inexpensive undertaking to get that type of care.
Boy, you're quite right. To be up to today, a lot of things have not been told to me. I know the West Indies Cricket Board made some input. I know people in St. Vincent, they formed the Winston Davis Fund and they contributed. Family and friends, the United States of America, even the medical staff, I mean, some of those folks have even probably heard about cricket. And I receive excellent treatment. So all in all, above all, Dr. Ford, my greatest thanks goes to my creator. With all the help people gave to me, without his help, I wouldn't have been here talking to you today. So I thank everybody, with a whole heart for everything they've done. But I have to remind them and remind myself that without God, the Creator, I wouldn't be here. So.
And of course, Vincent, this would have changed your life dramatically. I mean, this is a sad story.
It has. But, Andrew, look, everybody, one of the things I've come to appreciate, everybody in life has something they are dealing with. It may not be as radical as I have, but you got two choices in life. You could either be negative or positive. And I have to say that while living this life, while being, paralyzed from the neck down and using a wheelchair, relying on living care, all the things that go with having a paralyzed body, I still enjoy my life.
Mm-hmm.
There are days when it's hard,
mm-hmm.
but I've been blessed with some wonderful carers, and that's probably half of the battle. Good carers make your life a lot easier. They're there to help you do the things you would normally have done for yourself, but you can't and you need help. And once you're willing to accept that help with a good conscience, it's not as bad as, some people might fear.
Oh dear. Any family?
I've been back. I've been back to the Caribbean 3 times since the accident.
3 times, okay.
Mm-hmm. 3 times. I've been to the United States 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend them invited me up to Scotland, and I flew up there. No, look, there's a lot of equipment and, like I say, support. England has got a well-oiled system to help people like me live a relatively independent life in the community. I mean, this afternoon, around lunchtime, I always tell folks I'm going for a walk. I use an electric wheelchair, and I went for a walk around the estate that I live on.
Mm.
So my friends had to stop there, have a chat, and I came home.
Mm.
So, look, it's not as bad as it might appear. It is difficult, it's challenging, but there's a life that you can live and enjoy.
Well, you did say you've been back to the West Indies on 3 occasions. We know of our economic limitations, but what are some of the things you believe we need to put in place to assist the disabled in the Caribbean to make life as easy as you mentioned it is in the UK?
A lot of things has to do with, if you think about housing, you got to have the right, I use a overhead hoist to get me in and out of bed. I think equipment, the availability of more probably equipment that can help take the load off the carers. I think more information with regard to how somebody like me who's in a wheelchair can still have a good quality of life. When I came out of hospital, I was determined. Well, let me put it this way. A young lady who was in the hospital with me said to me, Winston, when you go out, don't sit in the living room looking out the window. Otherwise, you'll be dead in 5 years. I took her advice and I got involved with disability groups up here, which took me, you know, wide and far and advocated on behalf of people with disability. And that helped. So I think it's really the nitty-gritty. Somebody like me don't need sympathy. All we need is a way to make things easier for us to live in a community that's not designed for somebody like me. For example, when I go home to St. Vincent, you know, in the United Kingdom, I got a vehicle. It sits out there on my drive and I can, you know, I can just get in it and go where I want to go. And when I go home to St. Vincent, it's not that easy. I don't have my own vehicle, and vehicles are not that easy to come by. And it's nobody's fault. It's just the way things are. So, you know, and it makes such a big difference to me that I can go shopping, I can go watch sport in London. I live in the Midlands. It's 3.5 hours to London in a car, you know, and 3.5 hours back. So you need a reliable vehicle. So it's those little things that, well, I say little things. These adapted vehicles are not cheap. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that can make somebody's, you know, like me, life a bit more easier.
Vincent, any family members up there with you in England?
Yeah, my wife is up here. Remember, back in 1990, I got married to an English lady.
Right, right.
So, yeah, she's up here. My daughter is up here. We have a 28-year-old daughter, Jessica. She's here. And my wife's family is here. I have some other children in St. Vincent. They're big men now. They're making me a grandpapa.
Okay.
I have a son living in the United States. And yeah, so, like I say, my brother live in the United States, Canada. I have a sister in Canada, and I have a sister living in St. Vincent. One of my older brothers, Kendrick Whittle Davis, he's known as the walking pacer, an umpire down there, sir. And Roger Davis, I think, is involved in the St. Vincent Grenadines Cricket Association. So, my mom passed away in 2009. And that was the last time I went home. I went home for the funeral.
Went home for the funeral.
So I haven't been back there since 2009.
Vincent, how's your wife and daughter taking it?
Boy, that was one of the, how could I put it, missed opportunities. Because I was the one who was injured, the focus was on Winston. My daughter was only 5, so she's always grew up seeing her dad, you know, using a wheelchair. So, but my wife, she was really affected, but it went unnoticed. Anyway, yeah, she's bounced back. She's still working. She worked with the bank up here. So she had some problems with dealing with stress, having to look.
Bridgestone, Barbados. Why no Kemar Roach? That was a little bit surprising. Didn't he have any injuries to Kemar Roach? And one would have thought that he would have been an obvious selection. The other thing, too, is that the construct of the side, is there a need to play 3 spinners? I suppose because of the fact that they expect the pitch to take spin. This is why they've been influenced to go with 3 spinners. And that, of course, is another question. Well, we've got the experts to discuss that and other things. Johnny Grave, the CEO, is already on the line. He's got several things to report. But before we speak to Johnny, let's go to former West Indies fast bowler, Richard Prof. Edwards. Richard, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Andrew. Thanks. I'm good.
Good. Okay. Your reaction to the first day's play, the West Indies, 224 for 9 in pursuit of 386 made by Sri Lanka?
Yeah, always going to be a bit of a struggle on the pitch, that staking turn of the Sri Lankans with their slow bowlers. And useful pace as well in Shimara. He's a useful fella. He's not going to make you lose any sleep, but he's good enough to keep you honest and Lakmal, not giving away anything at all. So a good bowling attack, and they always knew it was going to be a bit of a struggle to score on those slow pitches that take turns.
Mm. I know you may not want to look into your crystal ball, but you think we can save it?
Well, it depends. I mean, you're going to be, what, 100, how much you are behind now? 160?
Yes, 162. Yes.
100, yeah, behind.
That's a lot of runs. Mm-hmm.
Even if they lead by 150, it's still a big lead, and then come and make another 225. It's going to be very, very difficult to save the match from here, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the construct of the West Indies side, no Roach? Did that surprise you, Prof?
Very much. I mean, he's the number one bowler. Obviously, they figure that they're not going to get a lot of help from the pitch, which you don't. But he is our number one strike bowler, and to not to play him is very strange. I figured he must be injured, so that's why he's not playing.
Well, the reports are that he's not. They decided to go with Gabriel Holder in the attack, and of course, Kyle Mears to bowl a bit of medium pace, and they went with three spinners. Were you surprised by that combination, Prof?
Yeah, slightly, I would say so. I mean, the chase is always useful, but he's not. It's very unlikely that he's going to get 5 for 35. You want one of your top spinners on pitches that's going to take turn to get a 5 for under 50, say, to make a big impact. He's bowled well, but he's not going to run through a side like, say, Lance Gibbs or any of the fast spinners like that. But he's useful from our bowling. What is his name?
Warken. And Cornwall?
Yeah, not Cornwall. The other left arm.
Oh, Warken, Jamal Warken.
Warken, bowling usefully, and so on. But again, yes, basically ordinary orthodox bowler. He's not going to get 65 or anything like that, anything to bowl out of sight. He's going to be a good, honest player. But again, I think 386 was what he was probably likely to get from a Sri Lankan side.
Mm-hmm. Prof, just before you go, in relation to the decision to put Blackwood to open the batting, well, you know that the young man in his first test match, Susanna, really got, you know, an injury. In fact, it's out of the game, a nasty blow. You struck at forward short leg. Were you surprised that they chose Blackwood to open with Brathwaite?
I would say so. I think so. The only thing I was wondering if, because they were figuring that he might have the pace better than slow bowlers, that they sent him up the order to open. Yeah, but you will have.
What do you think Hope should bat in this team? Roger Harper, the lead selector, said the experiment of having him bat at the top is all over. Where should Hope bat in the side?
No, but if you're going to play Hope as a bat, you got to bat in, I would say, no lower than four.
Mm.
Yeah, I think he should be batting about four.
Mm. And Kyle Mears? Where would you bat Kyle?
Well, you don't have the full thing you're looking at it here, but he bats in about between five and six,
yeah.
Five or six, because he's going to play short.
Yes.
And if he likes to play, get on the attacking mode. And if he has some room and can get on the back foot and pull away the ball or cut it away, he will play positively. And he's going to give you a few runs in between. He's not a tight player on pitches that are going to turn. It's going to be difficult. But he will attack the bowlers. If they bowl anything, he'll knock them around.
Mm-hmm. Final question to you, Prof. You've got the English coming. I understand that in February, early February, Barbados will be playing the first three rounds of the first class competition. Can you confirm this?
I understand that that's the case. I'm not too sure. Actually, having a meeting tomorrow to discuss and look at the pictures and so on.
Mm, I see. All right, well, Prof, enjoy the rest of your evening and stay safe, huh?
Thank you.
All right.
All the best.
There you have it. Richard Prof Edwards, the former West Indies fast bowler, of course, creator. and he offered his thoughts. Interesting situation there developing in the test match between the West Indies and Sri Lanka. We're now joined by the CEO of Cricket West Indies, Mr. Johnny Grave, just back from an ICC meeting. And, of course, we want to welcome you. How are you, Johnny? Looking as young as ever there in Antigua.
I'm all right, thank you, Andrew. How are you?
I'm okay. Right, your good friend Dr. Ford, yes. Before we talk about the ICC meeting and, of course, anything you can report to us, the Pakistan tour, I'm hearing that the tour is possibly in trouble. Is there any truth in that, Johnny?
Not to my knowledge, no. Yeah. The women have just toured there successfully, won all three games as part of our preparation plans for those very important qualifiers that are going to take place in Harare. Obviously winning our first game today, which was great against Ireland. I spoke to our security consultant 24 hours ago, everything's moving ahead as planned. We've got a meeting with the players later this week to go through both the medical and security plans. I've not heard anything.
So what I've just said, you should throw that to the window then. Somebody, just like a fly in the wall, I heard that there are some concerns. Are there any concerns at all about the Pakistan tour?
Concerns in terms of the Pakistan Cricket Board's ability to host us, concerns with us going?
Any concerns at all that you want to share with us? No?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Oh, no, okay, fair enough. Well, I was told that there were some challenges. The major players, the top players, are they going? Because I note with interest that the team has not been announced. It's been selected, I understand, but no announcement. Are you expecting the major players to go?
We're announcing the squads for both the one-day international matches and the T20 internationals in between the two test matches. We don't tend to announce squads during games. So, we're announcing those in between the two.
Mm. Is the West Indies white ball captain available?
Is the West Indies white ball captain available?
Mm.
Yes, he is.
He is. Okay, fair enough. People tell me things, so Johnny, so therefore I'm asking you, all right? Because I'm hearing that, one or two players have been selected ODI, which I'll talk about it a bit later on. All right, so no major concerns in relation to Pakistan, no challenges, and the West Indies white ball captain, Kieran Pollard, is available to tour Pakistan. You're going to confirm this?
Andrew, I don't know what you've heard. I don't know what you're saying. As far as I'm concerned, the Pakistan tour is on.
Mm.
We've had the security reports in. We've had confirmation of the security plan from the PCP.
Right.
The team will get the same presidential style security, the highest level of security provisions that any team can get when touring. The women have just been there successfully in Karachi. The flights are booked. The squads will be announced in a few days' time in between the two test matches. I don't know where you're going or what you've heard, but from where I sit, the board of directors have approved the tour.
Right.
Many of the players toured there in 2018. Many players have played in Pakistan, in the Pakistan Super League. I don't know what you're hearing.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on. Dr. Ford, any questions in this regard before we move on? Anything you want to say?
I'm not privy to the Pakistan possible issues they may have mentioned. But I did learn something last week. Johnny, I was told last week that the show is a bit too negative. What are your views on that?
This show?
The Mason and Guest show, yes.
I didn't listen to last week's show. Apologies. I was in the air somewhere between Dubai and London on my way home. I don't set Andrew's homework. He always has interesting homework that he's done. He's done some homework on Pakistan that is completely news to me. And I've given you my honest appraisal of the situation. But the media are there to hold administrators like myself to account, and that's part of the job that I do, part of the role that I do, and this show is an important forum in terms of my perspective, for us to get important news to our fans and to explain the decisions and explain the challenges that we face. So, you know, I don't set Andrew's homework, and you know, I'm willing to take any short balls from you, Dr. Ford, that you wish to give me, and I'll give you my honest appraisal and opinion based on the facts and the world that I see. But in terms of this Pakistan tour,
it's on. Okay. Well, fine. I just heard that, and so I thought I would share it with you. I'm not saying that it is off. I'm just basically telling you what I heard. But just before you continue with that, Dr. Ford, last week on the show, Vice President Shallow took Dr. Ford to task. He said he was absolutely negative, and in fact, I had to partly tell them. Have you heard anything about that, Johnny? No one said anything to you?
He was in the air.
He was in the air?
He was in the air, and he didn't listen to the show. But Johnny, I must commend you for being one of the more astute members of the of the hierarchy PWI, and what you do say does always seem to be logical and based on some foundation and principle. The job of individuals on shows like ours, we get feedback from the fans. We also are aware of things that happen in the cricket. We're watching. We're aware of successes and failures. And even though we can mention the successes, as you would expect, when things aren't perfect, of course, there will be issues that need to be dissected. And I do commend you for being someone who's able to appreciate that, even if it's not appreciated by others. But I will move on to ask you, Johnny, with we had a lot of broadcast rights deals made recently and that we've been proud of, and looking at some of the revenue that would be gained. How do you assess the success of those rights when you look at the ability of the average fan to view some of the cricket that's being played by the West Indies, especially when we're abroad?
Well, when we're abroad, one of the challenges that we have is that you know, we're not in control of those rights. And I've been regularly saying that I think that being a West Indies fan in particular is very, very difficult. The deals that our opposition members will do for this market in particular, which is a very, very small market with traditionally very small amounts of money to be earned, tends to be the last on the list, the last on the list of rights in which you'll sell. So our fans often know very late in the day where matches will be available, what platform, and we'll probably need multiple subscriptions in order to watch West Indies home and away across our men's and women's side, including ICC events. So it's a massive challenge, and I certainly am a fan of world cricket getting its act together to revisit that, and potentially pooling rights, potentially trying to work together more collaboratively, because ultimately, you know, if fans want to watch and follow their team, they want to watch them home and away. But obviously having no control over that away content and how it's viewed here in the Caribbean is a challenge. But it's the current model that we work under, and, you know, hopefully as the global TV market, you know, continues to sort of evolve, there may well be through acquisition of rights, it might become easier for the fans, but it's certainly not something that we can directly control. And, you know, I think it is unfortunate, not just for us, but for all fans around the world.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a large cross-section of fans who may still have an interest in the game, and they're unable to follow things or fortunes away. And it does hinder the goodwill and the other things that we want to foster, even though things may not be going the way that we'd like. That's a big consideration. So I hope that going forward, maybe somewhere in the negotiations, we can try to secure either that way or through sponsorship some way that we can ensure individuals can watch the match easily without having to be experts on the internet. on the good news side, you did mention the hosting of the co-hosting of the 2024 World Cup. I think it is. Is that correct? And with the USA, we're in a COVID environment. All of the governments have spent lots of revenue on COVID. Deficits are piling up. I do know that the ability to host or co-host such a world event does require some buy-in from the government, and also there will be some part that CWI would have to play along with maybe the U.S. What are the any financial concerns as it relates to the government, the input of government, or CWI for that tournament?
No, look, I think it's you know, it's one of the better bits of news we've had for quite some time to be able to host the men's flagship ICC event in the next cycle, and more importantly, the first one in the cycle is massive news for us. It really is. We didn't host any of the men's events in the last cycle, 2015 to 2023, when it ends. We did get the Women's World T20 in 2018 and the Under-19 Cricket World Cup, but we're very busy planning the final few touches to that tournament that starts in January. But not to have a men's flagship event in the region since 2010 has not been good for us, either financially nor for our fans, nor for the region as a whole. And the 2024 Men's T20 World Cup, which is going to be a 20-team event, happening in June, a period of the year when many of the countries would be crying out for tourism as we enter that sort of the early part of the hurricane season. So for us, it will be massive. We've got 10 fully accredited stadiums in the region, so I don't think there's a massive need for any more or any significant investment in those stadiums other than the ongoing improvements and upkeep and maintenance. But again, this tournament presents an opportunity for those venues to host more international cricket. So I think it represents a massive opportunity for Cricket West Indies. It represents a fantastic opportunity for the region. I hope and pray that we're not having to deal with COVID or any new challenges from that perspective in June 2024. And therefore, it will be, a massive boost to the entire region. And that's my hope. And clearly, what it also represents is a demonstration of the work that we've been doing behind the scenes with our counterparts in USA Cricket. And this is a major, major part of the strategy we've had in place with them. We've hosted USA and our Super 50 Cup for the last few years. We've hosted them in youth tournaments and events in the men's and women's game. We just hosted the ICC Americas tournament for the next year's T20 World Cup, their qualifying event here in Antigua. And this is all part of trying to help support cricket in this time zone. And I think for USA, we hope that when the ICC announced the hosting applications and invitations to the women's events and under-19s in the next cycle, will be successful in attracting at least one or two of those to the region, so that it won't just be 2024, we'll be able to host a youth or women's event shortly after that. And that's all part of what we hope will be a longer-term vision to get cricket into the Olympic Games in Los Angeles in 2028. Yeah, it's massive news for us, and will be a financial boost to Cricket West Indies as well as the whole region.
Just before we ask another question, Doctor, we're going to take a commercial break and come back. Of course, a little bit later on, we're going to open the lines because we want to spend some time as well looking at the test match that is ongoing, West Indies versus Sri Lanka. But of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association with the regular.
Yes, you're listening to Mason and Guest. You're tuned to the Cricket Show, and we are pleased to present you to the Mason and Guest, which is brought to you compliments of the Cricket Show each and every Thursday. We trust that you may enjoy the broadcast. A little choppy, but of course, you can enjoy it all.
You've got CEO of Cricket West Indies, Johnny Grave, just been joined by former West Indies opening batsman Philo Wallace. Earlier we heard from Richard Prof. Edwards, and a little bit later on We hope to go around the Caribbean to get some reaction to the West Indies Sri Lanka game. Yes, yes, Doc.
Oh, okay. Johnny, has it been decided how the World Cup will be split up? Will the West Indies and USA do preliminaries, and then who's going to get the final, or is it still to be determined?
It's still to be determined, but the current thinking and plan is that from a US perspective, we'll start on the West Coast and move sort of the matches down through Dallas and Texas into ultimately Florida. And from a West Indies perspective, we're looking at hosting about 2/3 of the matches in the Caribbean. So there'll be lots of cricket here, probably with, you know, Florida and Jamaica, which are obviously only an hour away, maybe hosting one of the group stages. So there might be a group hosted across the Caribbean and the US, as well as groups anchored into the US and groups anchored into the Caribbean. But broadly speaking, there'll be 2/3 of the matches in the Caribbean and 1/3 in the US.
And with hold your thought, Doc, in terms of the finals, would Barbados host the finals, or that's too early to say?
Yeah, we'll go through a similar process we have done for the England tour, so we'll invite, and for the Under-19 Cricket World Cup that's happening in January, so we'll invite invitations to bid to host matches to all the Caribbean governments that have internationally accredited stadiums, and then run that process. But there will be, I'd like to think that this event will visit a number of our Caribbean countries. I'm sure it'll be competitive, but you're probably hoping that at least 6 countries would be able to host.
Okay. Yes, Doc.
Yeah, in 2018, the CPL had gone to the US for a little bit. In 2019, they had announced that they would move from that model, citing revenue and ticket sales somehow. Are there any concerns about the fan base that will be there, or do you think that being a world event that can override the experience of
CPL? I think the whole event, you know, June 2024, we're looking at it as, you know, the Caribbean and the USA will be opening their doors to the world to come and watch cricket. We obviously say regularly that there's no better place to watch or play cricket than the Caribbean, and we hope that the world will come here in their masses to enjoy and celebrate the game. We want the matches to have that Caribbean carnival flavour to them, but also, you know, the best of American sports entertainment for the US games. There are 35 million US cricket fans based on current research by USA Cricket and the ICC. So there's a significant number of fans already there. Clearly, the matches that we took, West Indies v India to Florida most recently in 2019, you know, we sold out, I think, over 10,000 tickets a day at $170 a ticket in about 3 days. So we've seen a massive appetite in the US, particularly for when West Indies are playing those Indian subcontinent teams. And I think by 2024, we hope to have unlocked even more fans and the diaspora to be able to put on, you know, what we think will be an amazing event for cricket fans around the world.
And the question which gave some difficulty last week was, basically, in view of the results from the recently held T20 World Cup and having a retreat recently, are there any initiatives or plans that you're aware of that could be put into place to improve the fortunes of the CWI and the team, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, like every day we're looking to improve the system and make refinements to what we're doing. Clearly, COVID's had a massive disruption in the last 18 months, but we're hoping that 2022 will become a more, should we say, normal year in terms of our cricket programs and structures, and that we can get a number of initiatives fast-tracked in terms of getting them back on track. Coming out of the review of the World Cup, there will be a number of things that we do differently, but also you know, even keener focus on some of the things that we've started, but not necessarily been able to get the results from yet, because it's still very early days. But we're constantly reviewing the system, trying to make improvements. obviously still being very cognizant of the fact that we're still in a global pandemic and things are extremely difficult, both in terms of logistics and managing costs.
And, you know, with your vast experience and also being a sports fan and, you know, reflecting on American sports, football, baseball, basketball, the British Premier League, would you say that it's a general thing that if a professional team is doing badly over a protracted period of 2 years or more, that there'd be changes in structure, management, and other changes at the top that relate to that team?
I think it depends on the sport. Or clearly, in the Premier League, you know, a football manager's life is pretty uncertain. Correct. You know, talking to an Arsenal fan who had the great Arsene Wenger at the helm for a number of years, you know, you know, it's different. There are different models. There are different owners, and there are different challenges. So, look, I think you can change people, but ultimately you've got to change the system. And changing people, we've seen in football, can have some short-term games, and then, you know, in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years' time, it can present the same challenges. So, look, I think the changes that we're certainly working on and very focused on are more about changing and improving the system and learning from the recent experiences of how we can do stuff differently in our planning and strategy, rather than necessarily looking just to, you know, cut a load of people out of the system and replace them.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got Philo Wallace very much with us as well. We've just been joined by Ian Bradshaw. Philo, if we can just turn our attention quickly to the match in progress. 224-9 West Indies in response to Sri Lanka's 386. Your thoughts, Philo?
Hi, good evening. I do believe Dr. Ford. Good evening, Ian. Johnny, it's so nice to see you. And it's good to hear you talk about changing the system. And I hope that when that document is presented, that that the system does change, because we need a change. Andrew, I'd just like to say good evening to your many listeners. And obviously, West Indies cricket is topical, you know, and very colorful. We're in Sri Lanka at the moment. I just want to say belated birthday greetings to my friend Sherlock Hart.
Oh.
Staff at Best of Santa, to continue to do that. Yeah, he's about 50. He's 50-something. I can't say 51. But he's growing up.
He's been in the 50s for a long time, though, Philo.
Yeah, but some people don't reach 50 at all.
That's very true. That's true, Philo. Yes, yes.
I was quite intrigued and started a test at series, and I was quite bummed by the selection of Fanny Lavin, because I don't know. I wanted to know if Kemar Roach is fit or he has diarrhea. You know, Jaden Steele. You know, these are two guys who were bowlers, was bowled well for us in the last test series, but yet we went in with Shannon Gabriel, who was not against Pakistan, or who pulled through the series against Pakistan. So that selection kind of baffled me. And obviously, unfortunate for Jeremy Solazano, who got that concussion. We had to slot back with Blackwood at the top. But when you look at it, obviously, Sri Lanka is playing well in their home territory. Goal is obviously their fortress. And West Indies are finding themselves, thanks to the rain, but they find themselves in a very, still not out of the doghouse, Andrew.
No, not at all. Still two days to go.
2 days ago,
a lot of cricket.
They're still with batting 70 balls, the 11 runs. Those kind of things. I want to know, you know, why he doesn't express himself a bit more.
Yes.
But obviously, on middle order, Andrew continues to be the bugbear. Kyle Mears was starting to look good. You know, then again, obviously not carrying on. And Jason and Cornwall came in at the back end. But again, that middle order, Andrew, is worrying. We know we're going to get a lot of spin. And our batsmen have to learn to try to cope with the turning ball. I was very disappointed in Rossin Chase's dismissal.
Yes. Very soft.
His left foot was on leg stump, and the off break is turning back in. The only way he can hit it is back pad to the short leg.
Yeah.
I think that he needs to get his foot closer to the ball. But these are things that the batting coach should be telling these guys. I shouldn't be in Barbados speaking about this on radio. These are things that they should be seeing, because they have video analysis and all kind of thing. And there's just some very soft, elementary outs. No big, a lot of simple mistakes that are causing our batsmen their wickets. And these are things that they need to look at. And again, Andrew is going to come down to batting for West Indies to save that game. Obviously, Sri Lanka knows the conditions better than any of the two teams, but our batsmen, again, will have to cover trumps. And I keep saying, we like to bat at our best when the pitch is at its worst. I don't understand our thinking. I think that we should look to bat at our best when the pitch is at its best so that we can make it a little easier for us going into the back end. Now, if we had some of these soft dismissals eradicated, we'll find ourselves on the third year in a stronger position and give us a bit more room. But we don't have a lot of room to play with. And obviously, we're hoping that our bowlers can come very, very good in the second minute and try to restrict Sri Lanka for less than 200 to give ourselves a chance going into that last year. But it's a battle for West Indies. And only time will tell how well we can come out of it. I heard the captain speaking. You know, and he's saying that they're going to look at the off-spinner, but I thought they would have looked at the off-spinner 6 weeks ago. Because I believe that the other team, Sri Lanka, has been looking at our batsmen and our bowlers for some time now. But these are things that I don't like to hear. If we have people who are working that backroom staff, and it's a big backroom staff, they need to be on point of what they're doing in relation to West Indies spin in these territories. You know, you need to get your details right so that you know when the off-spinner comes, this is what he's going to bowl, and prepare your batsmen for what they're going to be confronted with. You know, so these are little things that I hope that they iron out going forward, Andrew, because cricket is a changing game. A lot of thought processes are going into cricket. You have a lot of backroom staff. There's a lot of computers working, analysis working. And these are things that we need to try and get on point. When we get there, we understand, got some understanding of what we're going to face when we get to Sri Lanka. But unfortunately, we find ourselves in another precarious position. But only time will tell, Andrew, to see if we can dig ourselves out of this hole and come up with a draw or even come from behind a win. But again, it's going to come for application.
Application
with a capital A.
With a capital. All right. So horses there, Philip. We're going to pause our business calls when we come back. We're going to talk to Ian Bradshaw, the former West Indies all-rounder, and a couple of other questions for good old Johnny Grave, who is always welcome, you know, good or bad he comes to the show.
What has been the best thing in your time?
The show in bad times, but these are now serious times, but I've been trying to reach out to him, and I'm not getting any response from Roger Harper. So Roger, if you're listening there in Georgetown, Mason Guest needs you. Please come. Let's talk. And the president of Cricket West Indies has been on this show about once or twice, but I understand he's always in a tussle with Dr. Ford. That could be the reason. Well, we want to hear from the president of Cricket West Indies and, of course, the lead selector, Roger Harper, who normally comes on the show. But when we come back from our commercial break, we're going to talk to him. Mason Guest,
For me, it's difficult, right? I thought about not missing that.
Yes,
obviously. For me, I can give you two names. I can't give you one.
Right.
I would say Tendulkar and Vicky Pontius.
All right, former West Indies all-rounder Ian Bradshaw joins us. Good evening to you, Ian. How are you?
Hi, good evening, Andrew, and good evening to your distinguished guest, and always your viewing.
Yes. Well, when you've got people like Johnny Grave on, you expect that more and more people will obviously listen to the show, and Philo Wallace is a fixture, and Dr. Ford, who's always in a tussle with Vice President Shallow.
Let me endorse what you said. Let me endorse something that Philo said, and
yes.
I want to thank Mr. Grave for making himself available to speak to the Caribbean people. It's important, it must not be understated, that the people of the region are very passionate about the game. And it's important that those stakeholders made themselves available to give some clarity to the issues surrounding cricket. So, you know, as a former cricketer and as a fan of West Indies cricket, may extend a thank you to Mr. Grave to making himself available, and I encourage him to make more of his team available so that we can understand what's going on in West Indies cricket.
I think that's a powerful statement you just made there. And you know, Johnny is always available to talk to us. And, you know,
Just before we come back to you, Ian, Johnny, when is this report going to be available, the report in relation to the performance of the World Cup squad and the performance generally? Because I'm hearing that a committee, is it headed by Enoch Lewis? Am I right? Is that correct, Johnny? And includes...
No, every tour, including a World Cup, would be reviewed by a tour committee that is headed by the director of cricket, Jimmy Adams.
Okay.
So that's taking place, and the recommendations and full report will go to the board when they meet in December, in a few weeks' time.
Okay, so Jimmy Adams is the man. He's chairing that particular committee. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, he is. Okay. I think the chairman of cricket, Enoch Lewis, would be on that committee, along with the vice president and a group of individuals, some selectors, team management, medical practitioners, etc.
Right. Now, Johnny, in terms of the first-class season, I'm hearing that Barbados will host the first three rounds in February. Can you confirm that?
The plan is for the West Indies Championship four-day competition to restart in February with teams hopefully travelling and playing. Three rounds would be, we're going to anchor, we think, three teams at home and three teams would travel and then reverse that for the second round. But COVID is still here and amongst us, and we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, and there might be spikes. We hope not post-Christmas, but that's certainly the plan as we sit here now.
Well, Johnny, the reason I'm asking that is that I know Barbados are planning for it, and I'm told that Barbados will be hosting the first three rounds of the regional championship. Is that right?
The current plan is that Barbados will be playing at home,
right,
against their opposition in February. And again, that's based on the amount of cricket that we've got throughout the region. But I would say that we have to be very flexible in our approach operationally. You probably remember back in 2020, we were looking at hosting all six teams in one country playing across three venues. I wouldn't rule that out at this stage. But the current plan is that the Windward Islands, Barbados and Jamaica would play at home, with Guyana, Trinidad and the Leeward Islands traveling across those three home countries for the first three rounds. And then we would split it with Guyana, Trinidad and either St. Kitts or Antigua playing at home. So you can imagine the amount of volume of cricket we've got, particularly through that Under-19 Cricket World Cup, with 16 teams coming to the region playing from the start of January all the way through to the second week in February. There's a huge volume of cricket being played across those wickets. So Guyana, St. Kitts, Antigua, and Trinidad and Tobago, the host countries of that Under-19 World Cup, simply wouldn't be able to host four-day cricket. So it's based on that practical perspective.
I see. Okay, well, thanks for that information. I don't know if Dr. Ford or Phil has a follow-up, but let's go to Ian. Ian, your reflection in relation to the first test match, Sri Lanka versus the West Indies, Sri Lanka 386, to which the West Indies replied 224/9. We're in some trouble, Ian.
We are in some trouble. Unfortunately, I haven't watched a lot. I missed a lot because of the hours that has been played. So I can't comment too much of the cricket itself. But disappointing to see that we are behind again. Sri Lanka has been a challenging place for us to tour. And what I understand is the pitch has taken a bit of turn. And once again, our batters seem to struggle when they come in to face spin. And it's something that we have to work on. It's something that by now, the preparation has to be on point. And I don't know the level of preparation that went in. I'm sure Johnny could speak to that. But it concerns me the manner to which we seem to be somewhat unprepared for these tournaments. And I'm not too sure how much match play that we've had. And the reality is that COVID has struck the the Caribbean cricket fraternity extremely hard. The logistics surrounding moving our players around surely must have been the one that caused a lot of headaches for cricket West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that we got to ensure that we get our best cricketers at the various types of cricket being looked after by the best individuals. You're going to a place where it's very much spin-friendly conditions. It's important that you get your best former players and coaches available for that. The thought of a head coach being involved in a T20 World Cup and being in these bubbles and then being put in charge of a test team with so little time to work with them is something that we have to reassess. And the time may come because of our peculiarities and because of our weaknesses that we may have to look at a contract where we have our test coach and his team working with that team exclusively and putting the white ball coaching in someone else's hands.
Mm. Well, I know Johnny would want to respond to that, but just before he does that, very interesting observation. I'm told, and fellow, I know you normally know these things, that young Dominic Drakes has made the T20 squad from Barbados. I'm also told that Justin Graves, Raymond Reefer, and Shamar Brooks are on the ODI squad. Have you heard anything, fellow?
I sit on a review task force committee, but we don't really, we're not privy to selection.
So the answer is no?
I've heard a few Barbados have made it for down to Pakistan.
Mm.
And I want to commend Cricket West Indies going to Pakistan.
Mm.
We just saw New Zealand and England turn their back on Pakistan cricket.
Mm.
And I know that Ramiz Raj is a good guy. And he wants to see cricket in that country. And I'm happy that Cricket West Indies had the foresight to decide, look, we can get two squads there to play some cricket.
Mm.
The Pakistan cricket is at a high now. It's on a good keel going forward.
Right.
And I think it's going to be a good challenge for West Indies to see where we really are playing in those conditions. But
Phil,
I've heard that both guys have made it. And I want to congratulate them. Actually, I saw a couple of them at the weekend. I would tell you here.
Right.
Along with Carlisle Stewart, who's under the radar here, but I said congratulations to them, and I wish them all the very best.
So what I just said is true, fellow?
I don't know what is true, but I said congratulations to them. I'm wishing them.
You said congratulations to Justin Graves, to Raymond Reefer, and Shamar Brooks.
No, I haven't seen Justin Graves. I just
Dominic Drakes is playing in, he's overseas playing now. And he's got to go across to Pakistan.
I saw his mother the other day in the supermarket.
And you congratulated her on his behalf?
He's going away shortly, so I told her congratulations to him, and I hope he continues to improve.
Yes, a wonderful player.
I think it's all about development.
Yes.
And I hope that these young cricketers seize the opportunity
that's
given to them.
Mm.
I'm not a big fan of how the selections are going, because I think we've gone to Sri Lanka with six spinners. And I don't know why we would take six spinners to Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
That is bamboozling to me.
Mm.
I thought we would have loaded that squad with a bit more batting to help us counterattack the spin bowling. But I just want to wish all these young men all the very best on their trip to Pakistan.
Mm.
Do well. And doing well to me as a cricketer is performing in your various disciplines.
Mm.
And hopefully the bell will ring for you at another level as well.
Phil, I've got a question for you. Do you know if Pollard is going to Pakistan?
I don't know if Pollard is going.
Mm. Have you heard anything?
I haven't heard anything about Pollard and what he's doing.
Mm.
I don't know if he's been retained as captain.
Mm.
I don't know what selectors have recommended for this tour.
Mm.
All I can tell you is that the committee that Mr. Graves spoke about, that review committee, is working hard.
Right.
Mr. Enoch Lewis is the chairman.
Mm.
Director at cricket, James Adams, also sits on the committee, myself.
Mm.
And we also bring in Dr. Shallow. Then the time is right. He is ex officio.
Right.
And we've been working very hard, Andrew. We've had meetings last week. We're going to have a meeting tomorrow.
Yes.
And try to nail down this document so that when it's presented, hopefully by December, that there's some kind of common sense coming to it. And I hope that the West Indies Cricket Board members can see favor in this document and let us install it into our system.
Right.
And hopefully the franchise will buy into it as well and use it to bring West Indies cricket, make it a bit stronger and make selections of players a bit more transparent.
Right. Okay. Well, I've heard some things as well in relation to what you're going to report in. And I've heard, and Dr. Ford told me this, and that there's a recommendation that the selectors be changed. I wouldn't want you to comment on that, Philo, but, you know, they tell me these things. Sometimes they come off the wall. But just
I see that you have a spy in that room.
Yes. but just before we go to Ian, Johnny, can you tell us if the ODI, but the white ball captain has been selected?
No.
No.
I won't. I will make you wait until we
Fair
make
good.
The official announcement. But what I would say to Philo is Philo's committee is different to the World Cup review. So the World Cup review is being chaired by the director of cricket, Jimmy Adams.
Right.
And Philo is volunteering his time once again to continue to refine and review the selection policy.
Right.
Not the selectors as individuals, the policy and the system in which they, and when I say they, I mean the women's panel, the men's panel, and the youth panel operate.
Mm.
And I echo what Philo says. I think that the work that they're doing is required and well needed. And again, hopefully provide that blueprint for the franchises to drip that down through their youth teams and their men's and women's teams so that we get a really consistent process for how we select our best players, how we construct our teams. And I think in response to what Ian said, I think he makes a good point. I mean, one of the other ways that we've tended to look at it, especially with that limited preparation that we've had, albeit players came into Antigua for a camp. They played 2 3-day games here in Antigua before heading out to Sri Lanka. It is an opportunity to give opportunities to our developing coaches. You know, Shiv Chandrapur, who has just gone through the new level 3 course. We had Rayon Griffiths here, stepping up to sort of the head coach role. And we've had other sort of franchise coaches throughout the last sort of year or so coming into those best v best when the white ball team might be playing elsewhere. And it does give opportunities to our regional coaches to step up and have that opportunity to work with the elite players. But I take Ian's point. It is, the schedule is not getting any easier. There is a huge overlap in terms of when back-to-back tours are taking place, and therefore it's something that we continue, particularly in the men's team, to look at very closely in terms of when we finish regional cricket, what the players are doing and how we can best prepare them for the format that they're playing and the conditions that they're going to be playing in.
Ian, perhaps some big decisions will have to be taken by Cricket West Indies. Would you change the white ball captain? Ian, at this stage, Pollard, as you know, is the captain.
What I'll say to that, Andrew, is that look, there's a process by which you go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that you have your debriefing, understand not just what is happening on the field, but off the field, the things that we can't see. And I always say that the white ball cricket, it tends to be best managed in cycles. So most teams you would see look to a particular World Cup down the road and make sure that they give that squad and the leader the opportunity to move forward. So considering that we have a T20 World Cup on the horizon, certainly you wouldn't be targeting that in terms of your long-term goal. But you got to ask yourself the question, where are we right now? We didn't do terribly well in this tournament. And maybe it's the time now that we chart a course to win two T20 World Cups from now, and it might be best time to give someone the opportunity to mold the team to their liking.
So are you saying, Ian, based on that you would change Pollard? Is that what you're saying?
What I said, Andrew, if you listen carefully.
Yeah, I am listening carefully.
What you have to do now is to understand that if the options that you have available when you make that choice, you have to determine if that person ready at this time to take over.
So what do you think?
Certainly, I thought that Nicholas Puran, he looks good. He is someone that you could target. There's been talk of Pat Meyer. He's had some challenges from a fitness standpoint. So the person that are doing the debriefing, trying to understand what the qualities involved, we'll have to determine if these guys are ready to step up to the challenge. I can't say that at this time because I'm not that close to the cricket. But if they are and we believe that we can invest in them, then I would have no problem with asking Paul Fowler to step aside.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting. Very interesting comments. Dr. Ford?
Okay, well, yeah, that was interesting. I think I should go back to Johnny again. We are aware of the changes that have been made with election and also the new initiatives to review that process. We know that there's COVID. We also know about the stuff being done for umpires and other things. But we've had during the recent few years, some directors saying that they weren't privy to some of the decisions that were made and they felt left out, and there have been some other issues. So, Johnny, I really wanted to ask you about one of the important things that was mentioned for us to be successful. And I can quote what it says. I can quote it. A modern and fit-for-purpose corporate governance system with its consensus-oriented, accountable, transparent, responsive, equitable, inclusive, and results in the best decision-making. So that is a goal of Cricket West Indies for improving corporate governance. And I mentioned some of the things that happened. Can you list any of the changes that have occurred that would put us in that direction for improved corporate governance?
Well, I think you would have seen and read the Webby report that was commissioned back in 2019 that put forward a number of initiatives around how we could improve our corporate government structures, looking at best practice across both businesses and sports, both within the Caribbean and outside. And that report is still being discussed with our shareholder members and amongst our board of directors. So I think that in terms of governance reform is the process by which we are working towards, and hopefully a number of the recommendations of Webby report can be adopted by the shareholders and therefore implemented by us, at least in a phased approach, so that we can get to the stage where, you know, we are making sure that as an organisation we're using best practices and best corporate governance models to make our decision making is, as you articulate, you know, robust and transparent. But all of the decisions that we've made are made and ratified by the board of directors or approved by the board of directors. Some are more unanimous than others, shall we say? But there's no decisions that have been made in recent times that haven't been made in full support of the board.
Well, that's the thing I'm really getting at. I mean, we had the Wavy report and previous reports before that, and from an onlooker's standpoint, there seems to be an inertia with adopting ideas and guidance from reports. And I mean, Andrew has asked, and I asked last week, even about the simple review of the World Cup and waiting on that report. There seems to be a big lag time and a difficulty with decision making, even taking into consideration the directorship and the mechanisms that are there. It seems as though nothing really happens on a number of fronts.
I don't agree with you on your statement about the World Cup review. I mean, the World Cup finished, and you know, the team 2 days later flew to Sri Lanka. The review took place whilst many of the members of team management going through their quarantine in Sri Lanka. I'm not sure it could have happened at any earlier juncture than that. And clearly the director of cricket also talks to his high performance team and other people involved in that in order to write what will be a not just a comprehensive review, but also make sure that every recommendation that we're putting to the board in terms of ensuring that we can improve things on the field with that T20 side in particular, but also our wider international teams are well considered and then go through the framework. So the first base of that is, you know, I'll get a copy of that report and give Jimmy my feedback as well as other members of the management team and leadership before it goes forward to the board of directors. And again, they'll be given at least 7 days to read that report before discussed. So.
Johnny, I just have that as an add-on, but I'm really talking corporate governance here, and I'm just trying to show you a trend. If you look at something like the Wavy Report, which may be a few years old now, and maybe looking at another report that's in the pipeline, I was just trying to make the point that it seems like decision-making may be an area that needs looking at, because if you are to improve corporate governance, and I asked you to list some of the initiatives that were put into place to improve the corporate governance, but I haven't heard you go through that list.
Well, I can read the Webby Report recommendations if you want
things that were instituted by the Webby Report. I mean,
the Webby Report can only be corporate governance reform. It's never easy for any organization. It involves, in our case, the shareholders to vote either at the AGM or an extraordinary general meeting. They can't be changed by management. They can't be changed by the board of directors. You know, so corporate governance reform is never a quick, in my experience anyway, quick or easy process because you're normally making fundamental changes to the system. So there have been a number of corporate governance reforms reports written throughout the last 20 years, some of which have been implemented in part, some more than others. But you know, the evolution of the organisation from a corporate governance perspective continues, and we are currently very focused on the Webby Report and the recommendations that are before our board and ultimately will go before our shareholders, either in EGM next year or at the AGM in March. And I hope that a number of them will be adopted as the first phase of implementing, you know, the next evolution of our corporate governance reform.
Okay. Before Brian Lara went to Sri Lanka, he did some observations and strategy, and he decided to introduce the sweet shot as the method of counteracting muriliterin at that time. We've looked at the first innings almost completely of the West Indian reply to the Sri Lankan score. And we hardly saw any sweet shots. How do you account for the lack of that shot among West Indian cricketers?
Doug, the thing is that the sweet shot has to be, it's a personal decision. You as a batsman, you got to know which ball you can sweep, because length is going to be important. It is not a shot that you just turn on one day you're going to play. I think it calls for practice. But we are speaking about professional cricketers here, Doc, who have been to Sri Lanka, who have been to India, who have been to Bangladesh. And on those type of surfaces, the sweet shot is a very productive shot. I am surprised that our players don't use it. We have a batting coach called Monty Desai. And I'm going to keep hitting him. Johnny Griff could cut me off or tell me don't go back in that committee. But we cannot have a batting coach for so many years in our cricket. And our players at that level still cannot play a sweep shot. I know you can't blame the batting coach for everything, but he has the power to do things, to get these fellas to turn around some of their shot selections. And in the subcontinent, the sweep shot is very, very productive. And it surprised me that our players still cannot play. I don't know if they have the confidence to play. I see a lot of them batting in rib yard, inside tie pad, outside tie pad, extra tie pad around their bums. So I don't see the fear in playing it. They're batting helmets with grills. They need to practice it and be comfortable and confident that they can execute the sweep shot. Courtney Brown was a good advocate for the sweep shot. He used to sweep on land to the fine sweep, sweep in front of square. But again, it comes down to the batsman. How well equipped is he? How much confidence does that batter has to play that sweep shot? So it surprises me, but this is things that have to be worked on in the net. And as Johnny said, it's a quick turnaround between, you know, these test matches. There isn't a lot of time, so any work that has to be done. And apparently, and obviously, unfortunately, I don't think they got to play the warm-up game. So a lot of stuff would have been done indoors. So I can't tell you what really happened at the coaches, at the net sessions, but these are things that all players should be able to play, man. Sweet shot and reverse sweep and things, no doubt. People are playing them.
Yes.
We should be able to play them.
Yes. Well, it looks as if if you had your way, the side will be changed too. Well, let me come back to Ian.
I will tell you something, Andrew.
Yes.
And I'm being brutally honest here.
Yes.
Mr. Griff, President.
Yes.
I sit on a review committee.
Yes.
And we've been meeting out for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And my recommendation was to sack the selectors.
Say that again, Philo.
my recommendation was to stop the selectors because they make a lot of mistakes.
And what about the coaching staff?
Pardon me?
What about the coaching staff? Simmons
but
and company.
The coaching staff should have been reviewed and also been given. They have to prioritize what is important for them.
Okay.
At this juncture, Andrew.
Okay.
Andrew, we had a poor World Cup campaign.
Right.
And okay, they've given an extension to the selectors. I agree. They've given an extension. They have their reasons. But our selectors are making a lot of mistakes and causing West Indies cricket a lot of headaches.
Mm.
And I don't like it. When you do something wrong, you can't correct wrong. I would like the selectors to do what is right for West Indies cricket, Andrew. And I'm speaking here as fellow Wallace. If you do what is right for West Indies cricket, we are going to see the best cricketers representing cricket. West Indies, and we're going to see good performances.
Mm-hmm.
These players network, Andrew, and when you squeeze one fella, he's called another fella, so man, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, Andrew, that they get it right, because we are going to lose cricketers with a lot of bad decisions. And I'm not talking about umpiring decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about electoral decisions and administrative decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The people playing cricket all over the place, not T10, T5, all kinds of places.
Yeah,
all cricketers are still in demand.
Mm-hmm.
So please, my recommendation, and it's on record, I am not ashamed to hide my face or my mouth.
Mm.
I think that Pollard, I said it last week, Pollard has disappointed me. I thought he would have shaken the tree and put our two white ball squads into shape. He has not.
Mm. Well, Johnny said that they might have picked the white ball captain, but that announcement is going to come very soon. Ian, someone is responding to what you just said. Of course, you can send us a WhatsApp at 2534679. They're saying ODI captain Sheho, T20 captain Nicholas Poran. Ian, we need to move on from Pollard, Russell, Rampall, and Simmons. Your reaction, Mr. Bradshaw?
I'll say one thing, Andrew. We spend so much time debating names.
Mm.
If we put as much energy into getting our policies right,
okay,
we'd be lucky. And I think that you have a wonderful forum that you can drive discussions that move our cricket forward.
Right.
If you pick one guy today, next guy tomorrow, I mean, we've learned by this for 30 odd years.
Right.
If the individual's not going to make the difference, Andrew. It's like systemic challenges.
Right, okay.
That we got to get right. And we got to be honest with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect to have players coming through averaging 20, 22, and you want them to bat two days of test cricket in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. You're not going to have situations where bowlers not accustomed to bowling on good tracks, and when they put on good tracks, they're exposed and we complain.
Mm-hmm.
We got to prepare our cricketers better, Andrew. We got to make sure that there's greater competition coming through, more participation.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get those right, Andrew, you could be asking me about Pollard, Gill,
but it doesn't move our cricket forward. But Ian, while I agree with what you're saying, there's a World Cup in just over a year from now. We got to start to prepare for it. And the WhatsApper is saying, ODI captain, T20 with Nicholas Poran, ODI captain Sheho, and they're making the decision. They're saying, look, we must look past Pollard, Russell, Rampall, and Simmons. I think that's a fair comment.
There's nothing wrong with what the contributor has put forward. And
yes.
I embrace the fact that there must be review, and there must be structured review to understand where we go forward.
But do you agree with WhatsApp?
1 minute, Andrew. Andrew, 1 minute.
Yes, please.
1 minute.
Mm.
I'm saying to you that we have a system in place by which we must review and understand our way forward. And if it is that we decide that now is the time to form a team that will serve us for the next 8 years, and these guys can't play for the next 8 years, then we move forward from that.
Mm.
And that is the fundamental thing that we must exercise our time with. Because if you get that right, then naturally the Pollards and the Russells or whatever may not be in your equation. But if you spend your time worrying about the next series and not putting these things in place, Andrew, you can make the same mistake. So we got to understand what is wrong that Brandon King, who did so well a few CPLs ago, why didn't he go on? What's the problem there?
Right.
Why is it that someone like the captain of Jamaica, Rosmond Powell,
right, hasn't gone on?
A wrong cricket for an extended period of time.
Mm.
Why isn't he going on?
Mm.
Why is it that we can't find fast bowlers that are making people frightened? I mean, these are the systemic things that you got to get right, Andrew, because if we don't spend our time, and I encourage you to, use your platform to have these conversations, challenge the administrators, and that's why I was up front and saying congrats to Johnny for coming on this show, and we want to hear more people on this show. We want to hear James Adams. We want to hear all the territorial persons who are in the Jamaican positions, from the BCA, from Trinidad, Jamaica. We want to hear those people that are on the ground coming to speak about how they are moving forward our cricket. That's what the people are interested in. Trust me, Andrew. Your general fan right now want to see cricket move forward, want to see us get better. And I hope that you use your platform to drive that sort of conversation.
I think that's a fair comment, and we'll certainly take your advice. Let's pause for business, because when we come back, we're going to go to Gaul and talk to Fazir. He just had something to drink. it's got the color. I wouldn't say too much for Fazir. You know I'll get myself in trouble. But when we come back, we're going to go to the Gaul and, of course, speak to our good friend Fazir Muhammad. And the first question we'll ask Fazir is, why is Kemar Roach not playing? But Mason and Guest is brought to an association, friends of ASAP White Rum. Seven in the country, of course, that's the Eastern Caribbean time, and Jamaica an hour behind the rest of the Caribbean. Let's go to Sri Lanka and speak to Fazir. Fazir, what time is it there now? Can you tell me?
It is now 4:57 on a Wednesday morning in Golan.
All right. Well, nice to hear you, Fazir. Well, you've been doing some wonderful commentaries as usual. Your reaction to the West Indies performance at the end of the third day? They're in trouble, despite some rain, 224 for 9 in response to 386 made by Sri Lanka.
In trouble, yes, but at least they fought well on the play that was available on the third day, because I think when you look 13-6, you look at almost as a given that the West Indies would be dismissed under 200. Whether Sri Lanka would have been forced to follow on or not seems a moot point, because the general feeling among the Sri Lankans, the former players and so on, was that they were never going to enforce the follow-on anyway. But I think it's impressive that we once again saw the lower order, Jason Holder playing a key role in that, more than doubling the score from 106 to 224 for 9. There was some rain again overnight. It was raining, not heavily, but steadily. For much of it's stopped now, but we'll have to wait and see what happens when play actually gets underway, if it does get underway on time. So, because there's still 2 days left, and Sri Lanka right now have a lead of about 162. You don't expect too much with Sharon Gabriel coming in as the last one. So there's a lot of work to be done for the finish over the next 2 days, if the weather allows.
And what's the weather forecast? Do you know it?
Yesterday we were getting reports of a 90% chance of rain today. So wait and see. It did appear that the bad weather came in earlier than they anticipated, because they didn't anticipate rain just after lunch yesterday, but it swept in. And from really heavy rain throughout the afternoon, it was steady And because of that, they just couldn't get back on the field. So we'll have to wait and see.
Let's look at the construct of the final 11. Were you surprised? No Kemar Roach?
I was surprised, obviously, because if you're talking about maybe because of the conditions, looking at spinner friendly, that you're only going to go with one out-and-out fast bowler. It is obviously a gamble to go with Shannon Gabriel. There's no question that he's the fastest. But as we saw on day one, 4 overs in the morning session, 3 overs in the afternoon session, and then a few towards the end. Is that really sufficient from someone you would describe as your strike bowler?
Mm-hmm.
And when you the caliber of a Kemar Roach, and I, as soon as we saw the 11 confirmed, I checked with Dario Barkley, who's of course the traveling media officer with the West Indies team, to confirm that there were no fitness issues with Kemar Roach or Jaden Seals or anybody, and he confirmed that all were fit and available for selection. So I felt it to be an interesting selection or maybe an incorrect selection because I thought Kemar Roach would have had the experience and the know-how and certainly the understanding of the conditions to probably give a more sustained effort through a test match than Shannon Gabriel.
Mm. So you would have played Roach ahead of Gabriel?
Yeah, if I was a selector.
You would. Okay, and the three spinners. Are you happy with the three spinners? Would you have given consideration to anyone else? Or is it necessary to play three spinners?
Well, so it really depends on the philosophy, Andrew. And if you tell yourself, and that was a discussion that we were having, especially on the first day of the test match, horses for courses make sense if you know they are going to deliver. But if you're talking about our fast bowlers developing their skill, all conditions, someone like a Jaden Seals should be expected to be able to bowl and bowl properly in conditions that were subcontinental conditions. So it's all development. If you're only going to use them when the conditions are favorable, then that is going to hamper his development. So it was a judgment call, and I have no problem with that as far as deciding to go with a strong spin attack. But my issue was the preference of Shannon Gabriel over Kemar Roach. It could very well be different for the second test. It's the same venue. It's just going to be a couple of days after. But it really depends on whether or not they feel that policy would have worked, because you saw 5 wickets for Austin Chase, 3 for Jomel Warrican. There was 1 for Rakeem Cornwall. To wait and see how this test match pans out. But the main thing for me was the omission of Kemar Roach.
All right, let's go to John. The lines are open now. We're going to certainly take your calls, 44 and 790, and you've got a panel that you can speak to. Johnny, in terms of the celebrations for Christopher Gayle, I understand you all are planning a big party for Mr. Gayle when the Irish come at the beginning of the year. Is that true?
We're going to play 3 ODIs against Ireland in the second week of January, and then 1 T20. At Sabina Park, and I think that would be, hopefully, if fans are allowed into Sabina, a good opportunity for us to say farewell to Chris at his home ground.
So what form is it going to take, really? Can you tell us?
No, we're still talking to the government of Jamaica around the protocols and the ability to play the series there. But again, I'd hope within the next few days that we can confirm that series, 1, taking place, and 2, being held in Jamaica. So
Gayle is determined when he will finish, not the West Indies.
No, I think we know that in terms of international tournaments, that was the last one that Chris played in, and it's now whether collectively we all feel that it's appropriate for him to have one last game at home to say farewell, a one-off game, and certainly that Ireland series would represent that opportunity. Whether or not it happens, I don't know. But I think, it would certainly be appropriate, for, as far as I can see it, to treat our players and give them the opportunity to bow out, especially players like Chris, who have had unbelievable careers, won trophies for the West Indies. So.
Ian, you agree with that, or you would have said to Gayle at the end of the World Cup, that's it?
Well, if the opportunity is going to present itself, that we can honor someone who served West Indies well. I have no problem with the opportunity. Want it. I say once again, it must fall within the framework of what we're trying to achieve. And I don't think that, say, for example, we use a T20 match and we give Gail the opportunity to participate in a match like that. I don't think it's a discredit to West Indies cricket at all. And I think for the players that are coming through, it's important that they see that former cricketers are being respected and appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
We've had so much bad blood, and it's been so badly publicized in the media where our player relationship are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
This may be a good opportunity for us to say thank you for someone who served West Indies well.
Mm-hmm.
We've missed the opportunity to study some of the greats who unfortunately left the game, and it wasn't ideal. So Vivian Richards, for example, I remember Malcolm Marshall, some of those guys who legends of the game, and maybe if we could turn back time, we would try to honor those in a greater way. It is not anything that he is entitled to. I think it's a gesture, and if it can be accommodated, I don't have a problem with it, to be honest.
Fazir, do you have a problem with it?
Well, I disagree with it fundamentally, in the sense that basically what you're saying is that you are using an official match, an international match, to grant a farewell. I understand the point that is being made, that he served the game so well and been there for so long and all of that. Well, give him a testimonial because I felt that after the 2019 World Cup, for example, once more the idea was, are we moving forward with all one-day team, or are we basically undecided and toing and froing over whether or not Gail should be part of the West Indies team moving forward? For example, is this particular situation prompted by what Gail has said, or was this always in mind as far as Cricket West Indies? And I think I fully appreciate the point made by both Brady and Johnny about treating our players with respect and a farewell and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way that we talk about these players just being, after outstanding long careers, just being cast aside without offering any dignity or farewell. It's another thing now to see a situation where a player has basically called for a farewell, called for an opportunity to play a last match. Gail also wanted to play a last test in Jamaica. Thankfully, that was not granted, because I think that is going down a road where you have a situation where players of certain stature are making demands, which I don't think should be entertained as far as the international structure of the game. Because what are you saying then, for example, whether it's a T20 or a one-day match that he plays in Jamaica, are you saying that somebody's going to be left out on merit to accommodate somebody's farewell? Well, give him a testimonial. In the same way that you see in other countries, and we often follow English do, and we look at their sport, cricket, football, and so on, you have a testimonial, an all-star game or whatever it is. But I think it's going down a dangerous road when you establish a precedent where someone is allowed to play an official international match as a farewell if they don't deserve that place on merit.
Philo? We want to hear you, Philo.
Andrew, this is a bugbear again. It never happened in the past, I don't think. I think granting Chris Gayle a farewell game, to me, it's a no, he's 42 years old. He's come to the end of the road. Cricket West Indies should have had something put in place, maybe even before the World Cup started, to let Chris know, look, this is where we think you should end. Because at the end of the day, we have to have a succession plan for cricketers going forward. And if Gayle is not going to be in the future planning for West Indies cricket, why grant such a game? And I agree with Fazir. When you set precedent, don't live up to them, then you're going to hear, but you do it for this body and not this body. And if this is going to be the case going forward, well, Cricket West Indies, you know, they know what they have to do. He's been a good servant, Andrew. I don't disrespect him. I'm all for what he has done, but we're not seeing the best of Christopher Gayle. And if we're going to give him one last hurrah in his hometown, all I'm pleading to Mr. Graves, do it right. Because you can't correct wrong. Like, I am not in favor of it, but Cricket West Indies, they're the people who are in charge. And if they decide that they're going to talk with the authorities and do it for him, do it and do it right. And let us get Chris Gayle off of cricket in good standing with the board, and let's move forward with West Indies cricket. West Indies cricket cannot linger on one man.
For
the younger people who want to play, let them get the opportunities to play. A World Cup is months away, and we have to qualify. We cannot grant people favors in a job that is supposed to be business. I'm sorry.
All right, let's take some
the line.
Let's take some calls. Fellow, hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Hello, good night.
Good night to you.
Yeah, I the quad to the president. The matches are on the BCA website, but the two persons that I see missing is Naeem Young and Rashawn Premises. Is there any light that they can be shed on those two players?
Well, I don't know. I don't feel okay. Can you help the caller with this one?
Andrew Barbados have a selection panel headed by Hendy Brooms, my former teammate, my former schoolmate. I know it was bantered that Clarence Best had been added to that panel.
Yes, he was a selector, yes.
And I believe that they listen to this program.
And
I agree with the caller with Naeem Young with Rashawn Premises. These are two young, aspiring cricketers that can strengthen any cricket team.
Yes.
And I would like one of them to come. I would like the chairman of selectors, Hendy Brooms, to come on this program, because I would like to know why Rashawn Premises cannot feature in Barbados cricket.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reason?
Mm-hmm. Yes, caller?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let's take a couple of calls. 4341790. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening. How are you?
Good evening to you.
That's Manifest.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some concerns. Well, my first concern is the West Indies selectors never fail to surprise me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The thing they do now is expected. Well, the first thing would have been the issue with Kemar Roach.
Right.
I could understand the dilemma in that they wanted to get pace. I could understand that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they have a situation where after four overs, the man huffing and puffing, you know, and you wanted to bring him back, but you can't bring him back because you have to be considerate with his fitness. Maybe they knew something that we didn't know. All right. Kemar Roach, how many left-handers in the Sri Lankan team? Kemar is known for bowling good at left-handers. You mean that you couldn't even analyze? You're trying to get wickets. You're not trying to frighten people necessarily. You're trying to get wickets. You're trying to tell me that. But he was good at bowling at left-handers. That couldn't be a criteria for you to get two wickets in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
You got that, you know? And to me, the analysis, I keep saying the analysis of Sir Simmons and those guys leave me baffled. Then you get another situation where I heard Amir Sohail talking about how David Miandad was telling him that Zin, the bowler, is bowling, spinning at you from outside the leg stump. Take a few inches, set your guards a few inches outside of the leg stump. And then if he bowls it on the stump, you can back away from it and hit it through the cover in the cover area. And he said he made 160 listening to that advice. What is Monty Desai doing? Our top 12 batsmen cannot even sweep. I spoke to Desmond Haynes a few weeks ago. I said, Desmond, I was talking about coming down the wicket. So Desmond said, not me, boy. I frightened that when I come down the wicket, I would get left high and dry.
Yes.
Then I don't know the way the man turning. I was sweep. So I had to speak. I mean, Brian Larosset, the Englishman, practiced sweeping before they went to Sri Lanka. You mean that not one of the West Indies players can sweep?
Yeah.
And you got a batting coach.
All right. Well, thanks for the contribution, caller. We got a couple calls backed up. Let's go and take a couple. Got another 15 minutes left on the show. Hello, welcome.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
I want to correct Ian Bradshaw with something before he starts. He said West Indies have a problem playing against Spain.
Yes.
West Indies have a problem playing against anything.
Oh, dear.
And then again, I want to, Philip Wallace is one of my analysts, but he disappoints me every time calling for Gail. But I know he was a lawyer, so I didn't really do anything about it, or he might put me in jail.
Oh, I see.
And he dropped anchor in Sri Lanka.
Okay. Wonderful. The poet. Thanks for your contribution.
Yeah, I think Dr. Smorey gave me 10 out of 10 for that one.
No, I don't think he'll give you 10. He may give you 3. Thanks. Hello. Two other calls coming through. Hello, welcome.
I got a phone call.
Yes.
I missed the part. It's the Gordon Greenwich, the squad. So Gordon Greenwich.
Okay.
Squad.
Oh, he's in there.
And Naeem Young apparently is playing T10 cricket in Dubai.
Mm.
He hasn't played yet, but apparently he's there.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's availability.
So that explains it. All right, let's take another call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Gez.
Hello.
Hello? Oh. Hello, welcome, Mason and Gez.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Good evening to your panel.
All right, good evening to you, sir.
Right. Now, I want to ask one simple question.
Mm.
The same thing and things and grounds, et cetera, that opt in for the Sri Lankans equally opt in for the West Indians?
Say that again. What's the question?
The same thing, circumstances, and what have you, that obtained for the Sri Lankans, the same thing obtained for the West Indians, huh?
I'm not quite understanding what you're
saying.
What's the question?
The same circumstances, same grounds, same, they play on the same circumstances, the same setting, and all of this. And the Sri Lankans can make 380.
Oh, okay, from that perspective.
The same circumstances for both of the teams.
Right.
You think you're following me now?
Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean,
you know, Roland Butcher was saying to me only yesterday that we don't have spinners in the Caribbean who really spin the ball. I mean, when you saw the Sri Lankans bowling, you saw the West Indians bowl, it looked a completely different pitch they were bowling on.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to establish is that at the end of the exercise,
right,
then one can contend at your best. Accommodated than myself.
Right.
You've got to do your bit, I've got to do my bit.
I agree
with
that.
It's a competition.
Mm-hmm.
So the excuses that emanate after all of what happened is like leaves a lot to be deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And I often like the term of paying you on your merit.
Okay.
And treating on your merit. I want to ask you one final question.
Sure.
You know, there was something about the fees for the cricketers. It was on hold, and then they reinstated it some time ago.
Mm.
You remember that?
Yeah, well, they were having some challenges getting paid, but I'm sure that Johnny Graves would tell you he doesn't know anyone.
But the point I'm making is that the funds have been reinstated, et cetera.
Yes.
I think you've got to pull them again.
Oh, pull them again? Oh, my golly. That's an interesting one.
You don't regard me now, huh?
Yeah, I regard you. I regard you. Thanks for your contribution. Let's take another call before we go back to the panel. Hello, welcome, Mr. and guests.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night to you.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am not too bad today.
Yes, talk to us.
The USC should be glad for little rain.
The USC should be glad for little rain?
Yeah.
Yes. Why do you say that, ma'am?
I thought the rain saved the game.
The rain, but there's 2 days to go, you know, ma'am.
Oh, you know, 2 days to go, but it's just a little.
Yeah.
We already got ball out.
Mm. Yes, we seem to be in some trouble.
Yes, and we're struggling.
Mm.
So I'm glad that you ran come.
All right. Thank you very much for your contribution. So there's someone saying I've got some concerns about Cornwall's fitness. He notes with interest that that the silver had to run the ball to the boundary. You saw that, Fazir? I think you were commenting when it happened.
I saw it twice, where you have Shannon Gabriel at extra cover,
yes,
and Rakeem Cole flip, and the keeper has to chase to the backward point boundary to pick up the ball.
Mm.
That is what we've chosen. That is the decision that has been made. And again, credit to Rakeem Cornwall, because Andrew, you know very well, when he was first selected for the Leeward Island in the Caribbean T20 some 10 years ago, everybody made fun of his side.
Mm.
Everybody said, this is ridiculous. That how could you have someone like that then playing for a regional team? But he has proven himself to be a leading wicket taker in our regional first-class game as an off-spinner. Mm-hmm. The issue is, of course, his general lack of mobility. Otherwise, he's got a safe pair of hands that slip, and it is a give and take. It's whether or not the West Indies selectors are satisfied that it's enough of a trade-off to have someone that's that level of mobility who can't run free when it goes to the deep mid-wicket with his batting partner who can contribute significantly enough with the ball and is good enough in the field that it's considered a better trade-off than having someone else in the team, maybe a Veerasamy Pongola or somebody. And at the moment, the selectors have decided, yes, that they will continue to go with him. But once he's in the team, you're going to continue to have this situation where you have other chasing after the ball for him and not able to run two or three in certain circumstances. Is that acceptable for international test cricket at the highest level? Well, that's a question that has to be answered by the selectors.
Got one coming in to you, Fazay. Ask Fazay, the Trinidadian, if he retains Pollard as captain.
So asking me as a Trinidadian assumes that I'm automatically biased in favor of Karen Pollard as a Trinidadian.
I'm just reading the text.
No, I know you are. I know you are. I know. Don't worry about it. Don't get touchy, Andrew, because when the tables are turned on you, you're just
talk to me for
here. To be honest with you, Andrew. Yes. One is, you may recall, this is a private conversation about 4 weeks up here on the show.
Right.
And I said that other things happening, I couldn't appear.
Right.
Frankly, I lied because I was just simply tired of this thing, the same things over and over again, because nothing is wrong with having a conversation about the game. But invariably, it comes down to territorial loyalty and insularity. And we get nowhere. In 5 years' time, we might be having the same discussion. Johnny might still be here, CEO, and we might be having the same discussion. In 10 years, whatever. We just seem to be going around in a cycle. I'm tired of this. But
Cameron may be back as president.
You never know.
You never know.
I would, right? but the point is our cricket moving anywhere? A bit, because we've had these discussions many times before.
Yes.
We had Joe getting farewell test matches in 1948 and 1954. Here we are again talking about a farewell match to Chris Gayle. So are we really, to answer your question about Karen Pollard, whether Karen Pollard is a trini or not, if this determines that he is the best person to take the team forward and contribute, he deserves his place in the team. If they determine that he cannot and that there's a better option in Nicholas Pooran or somebody else, then he should be replaced. The fact of the matter is that going into that World T20, there were a lot of issues raised. There were a lot of questions raised about the composition of the team. So it's not about being wise after the fact. The whole issue of the fitness and the medical protocols, which appear to be very selective, raised a lot of questions, and those were not satisfactorily answered. And we saw the evidence. We're talking about competitive sport. This is not a benevolent society. This is some charitable cause, Cricket West Indies. It's about elite level performance. And if we're going to judge on the basis of elite level performance, and that does not include Karen Pollard, so be it. But again, there has to be a process with transparency and accountability. And again, that issue with the T20 World Cup. All of these issues that came to the fore were highlighted long before the tournament itself was played. So again, it's not a question of making noise after the fact. And is Cricket West Indies, via the selection panel, and one would hope that whether it's Johnny or Ricky Skerritt or Kishore Shallow, they have no influence over telling the selectors what to do, because we've had that before. The fact of the matter is that if we have a process that is transparent, that you can see the process in which things are done, then people will have better faith in it. There will always be polarization. There will always be insularity in West Indies cricket. People will always see agendas somewhere. But if you're transparent and accountable, in eliminating some of that, and I think what we saw in that selection for the World T20 just made things even worse.
Interesting. As we come to the end of the program, let's come back to you, Ian. What are your recommendations? I mean, you've just had the World Cup, T20 World Cup. The side look bad, you know, in Caribbean parlance. You know, I mean, they were bad, very bad. You got a World Cup just around the corner. the first-class season, according to Johnny, is going to be starting in February. You've got Ireland coming pretty soon. The English are going to be here pretty soon. What are your recommendations to improve our cricket going forward?
Andrew, one of the first things we got to assess is the impact of COVID to our game. And I think that is very much understated. I don't know if we're talking enough about it. We had some challenges at our school level, like feet here, particularly in Barbados, and if it's so in Barbados, I believe it extends throughout the Caribbean. Where, for example, games teachers can't get pitches prepared. There's not proper netting for our young people to play in. Our club system is running down. Clubs are struggling. Can't get membership. There's no discipline in clubs. So these systemic challenges are flowing right through our system. And this is why, with participation down, with numbers down, it dilutes the quality, and lack of quality means that there's not enough competition for players. I remember, and you remember this, I'm sure Philo does, when I started and when Philo was young in his career, we had someone like Roland Holder and Keith Appleton having to score 500 runs to fight over one play. You know, no, we can't get one person to contribute to that level. And that is a systemic problem that we have. You got to ask the University of the West Indies, who says that they are supposed to be a unifying light in the region. What studies are you doing? How are you working along with the territorial boards to put systems in place that we can see productivity and reward productivity? The entire ethos of our cricket has to change. I like what Philo said. It is a business, and it is a business. Ego cannot be the ultimate reward in making decisions. And so me, as a former cricketer, still a fan of the game, I wanted to see us address the systemic things in our grassroots to produce more cricketers. And it will encourage the people of the Caribbean to get back on board. And with the people of the Caribbean back on our board, that is one of our biggest strengths. Because so many great cricketers were developed on the back of strong cricketing communities.
Doc?
Well, I think as a scientist and as a doctor, I think in any problem-solving situation, you have to assess your weaknesses and your difficulties and come up with ways to solve them. But, of course, you need to institute those changes and solutions. So that's why corporate governance is so important, and the need to get rid of the inertia that surrounds cricket, not only at Cricket West Indies level, but at the board level. But certainly all of the boards have their part to play, because a chain is as strong as its weakest link. And there are too many boards who, if we look at it, do not produce quality cricketers for us to choose from. But there's so many issues that we mentioned. I mean, Fazer mentioned an obvious flaw in fitness and medical decision-making within the structure. We've looked at decision-making within selection. We've looked at a lack of communication and the use of rhetoric rather than looking at weaknesses and speaking truthfully. So I think the important thing is looking at the problem and then instituting the solution and then seeing if they work. And there must be accountability. In any professional or semi-professional sport, individuals that are charged with functions, if they give up their best and they're found wanting, I think they should be strong enough and able to say, I've tried my best, I'm not doing well, and I should withdraw, they should be withdrawn. So all of those things are important if we are to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Johnny, how do you feel, though? You've been in the job for just about 4 years now. You come on this program. We want to thank you for coming on this program. Are you frustrated that you're still really at the bottom? Are you frustrated, Johnny?
I'd like us to be at the top. But no, I echo what Ian Bradshaw and others have said. You know, the questions that we're asking aren't the questions that, much as I respect him, Philo's asking. It's not why players aren't sweeping in Sri Lanka. I mean, this is the same team that performed well in similar conditions in Bangladesh and won a test series. we're asking, you know, we need players at under 15 level. We need players at under 16 level that can play spin, sweep. That's where you learn the game. And really, at the top level, you shouldn't have batting coaches or bowling coaches, you know, teaching players new skills. They need to always be working clearly on their games and adapting. But it's right at the youth level, how are we coaching players? What facilities do they have? How are we teaching and providing that expertise so that players, when they come up to not even international level, but under 19s and the franchise system, that they've already got the skills and experience to cope, and that we're just refining them and giving them that confidence to go to the next level. So I echo what Ian says. The problems that I see in West Indies cricket is still on the field about making sure that we've got the systems in place right at that youth level, under 14, under 15, to develop the talent. And clearly, in order to get the best athletes at under 13 and under 14, we need that participation level in primary school to be as wide as possible, because that's where we want to hook our young people into the sport, get them interested in cricket, getting them wanting to play cricket, get them enjoying cricket, and then the best players coming through a system that's as robust and comprehensive as any system in the world. And that hopefully will mean that we're producing better talented cricketers and getting better results. But it's going to take everyone, as I continue to say, across the region at all levels to unite, to come behind that, spend more of our time discussing and debating and being honest about the system that we have and how we can improve it, not about who's being picked from which country and whether we should sack this person today and reemploy this person tomorrow. Let's actually have an honest appraisal of the system of West Indies cricket and how we can all collectively work positively to improve it, not just in the men's game, but the women's game. And, you know, cricket is part of the Caribbean. It's not just about the elite as well. We want a vibrant club system and school system of cricketers who will never play in the maroon shirt, but will enjoy and love the game.
All right. Well, thanks to you, Johnny.
We need to continue to professionalise every level, both at CWI and also at territorial board level. And finally, Andrew, I implore you to do your homework in Barbados cricket as much as you are in West Indies, so that when callers say, why isn't Primus and Niam Young in the Barbados setup, you can answer them. So I just leave you with that food for thought about your homework, both at the regional level with West Indies, but also don't forget your own home.
Barbados. Fair enough. Fair enough, Johnny. That's sound advice. You got one in there. Last week it was Dr. Shallow punching Dr. Ford, and this week it's my good friend Johnny Gray punching Andrew Mason. I want to thank you, Fazia. I really wanted to get you in, but the producer is saying time is up. Thanks to you, Dr. Ford. Thanks to you, Johnny Grave. Always good to see you. Philo Wallace is going to fire a lot of people. Ian Bradshaw was slightly on the fence, but he came down, did it back on the fence, and Fazer Muhammad is saying he will not pick Mr. Pollard. I'm Andrew Mason. He's open for a bye tomorrow. Yes, good night.
Yes, and there you have it. End of another wonderful show. Mason and Guest Talk. kidding me. Yes. You're on the radio.